Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 65 for December 7th, 2009. La La Goo Goo Gaga. All right, it's time for the iPhone Alley Podcast, the show that discusses all things iPhone, iPod Touch, App Store, iTunes, all that great stuff. With me here tonight is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. How are you doing?
Fantastic. How are you?
I am so dang fine.
That's great. Also here is Mr. Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Great. And Bill Palmer is also here from iProng Magazine. It's great to have you back on, Bill.
I'm to be referred to as Mighty Mouse Palmer. Didn't you get the letter from my attorney?
Mighty Mouse Palmer? Not,
yeah.
Magic Mouse Palmer?
Trying to get sued for the publicity.
They lost their, didn't they stop using that? Or no, I guess they're still using the wired version.
But look how much people were talking about Apple's mouse. I'm thinking if I could get sued.
I just got a Magic Mouse and I really it.
I think it's just called the Apple Pro Mouse now. They did get rid of the Mighty Mouse name, unfortunately.
Oh, really? It is called the Pro Mouse now?
Like the Apple Mouse, or yeah, I forget what it's called. They renamed it when the Magic Mouse came out.
Apple Pro Mouse.
With ADB.
With ADB.
Something like that. I can't. It's either just the Apple Mouse or Apple Pro Mouse.
Retro joke. but I do like my Magic Mouse. Get the, if anybody gets a Magic Mouse or they're hesitant to do so, because it's actually called the Apple Mouse. But Apple, if you're Mouse. If you're, you know, thinking about the Magic Mouse and the fact that it doesn't have anything except for like scrolling, which is stupid for having an entire multi-touch surface on it, get what is it, Better Touch Tool? Adam,
haven't tried that yet.
Oh, you, because you got the Magic Mouse, right?
Yes, okay, and the sole reason I bought a Magic Mouse, because I tried it at the store, I absolutely hated it, did not like it at all.
You got it to spite, you know, Apple?
I thought it was Apple's best mouse. No, I said, you know what, I have to be fair to my audience, and like, I can't make judgment on, you know, 2 minutes of usage in the Apple store. So my initial impression, and I said this on my show, was that I really didn't like it. I felt it was Apple's best mouse to date. The scrolling was great, but I had concern about some of the multi-touch stuff. And I've been using it for a couple of weeks now, and I absolutely have, shouldn't say absolutely, 75% changed my mind.
Okay.
You know,
well,
I think it's a great mouse. Do I like it a lot better than the two-button scroll wheel mice that I've used before? In some instances, yes, and in others, no. The gesture thing, still, I'm not sold on, but the scrolling, the momentum scrolling is awesome. I absolutely love it. What put it over the top for me, though, was the first time I was editing my podcast in GarageBand, because the left-to-right momentum scrolling for going down a timeline just rocks.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah.
So for like, and I could imagine for iMovie editing as well, it's got to be just sweet.
Well, dude, you got to get the Better Touch Tool, because it adds, I can do a three-finger swipe down for, you know, all window exposés, three-finger up for, you know, desktop, like you can on the trackpad.
Apple just needs to put that in there. I don't know why that wasn't. That was one of my big beefs, and that's a continuing beef for me, is that, well, why don't we have
three-finger? Well, it's a software thing. Yeah. It's clearly a software thing, so get the Better Touch Tool. Okay, now cool. We should talk about iPhone stuff, and I could say that it's tied to iPhone stuff, because it's multi-touch, right?
Sure, that's where the technology came from, right?
Yeah, exactly. So let's move on to, I think, the big news of the week. Apple has acquired music streaming service Lala.com. Now, for people who don't know what Lala is, I was actually introduced to it last night. I didn't actually write this piece, so it was interesting. I was with some friends, and you know, someone said, you know, oh, let's listen to you know, whatever artist, and one guy gets up and goes to the computer and, you know, logs into his Lala.com, and because he has all of his music on Lala.com, he was able to just start playing the music right there. So it allows you to upload your entire library to Lala.com, so you can play all of your music online wherever you are for free, unlimited amounts of time. And then you can then go and browse their library of like 8,000, or it's got to be a lot more than that, 800,000, something like that. 8 million. There we go. 8 million songs, and check out their stuff, just like iTunes. But the thing is, you can buy a song for online streaming, unlimited online streaming, for 10 cents a song, or get the actual MP3 downloadable version for 79 to 89 cents per song. And if you, you know, end up getting the online version and later on decide you want the download version, you just pay the difference. And so when I was told about this service, I was like, wow, that's fantastic. And did you know that Apple just bought this? And the guy who was telling me about all this, just, it blew his mind. Because and now that I've actually had some time to try Lala.com, I think it's fantastic. I think it's I feel like it's the way to consume music now. I think it's the best way. It's, you know, better than iTunes.
Now, just so everyone knows, the whole thing with the purchase of Lala, Apple and Lala have not confirmed that this has happened yet.
That's true.
Yeah. So
New York Times and Wall Street Journal are the ones who are the sources on this.
Right. But Apple didn't deny that they've bought Lala. So, you know.
Right. They just said
my guess is sometime this week they'll do the press release.
Sure. Yeah. Do you think they're going to say what they intend to do with Lala?
Absolutely not. This is Apple. What they'll do is snatch it up. They'll do with it as they please, and then they'll let us know when it happens, and then the rest of the industry will sit back and go, well, crap, we want to do that now.
Well, okay, Jeff, what do you think they're going – what's your prediction on what they're going to do? Do you think they purchased it to kill it, or do you think they purchased it to add – some cheap people to their team, or do you think they're actually going to use a lot of the ideas and technology to integrate it with iTunes?
I think they're going to integrate the technology with iTunes. Now, whether or not they do the whole music subscription thing, we'll see. My Jedi instincts tell me that Steve Jobs does not like the idea of music subscriptions.
Yeah, well, it's not a music subscription. You know, you buy per song and you get to, you know, the 10 cents a song thing is, you know, you get to, it's limited to playing online. And if you want.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you want the actual.
Apparently I'm kind of brain dead tonight. Sorry about that.
That's fine. But yeah, it's, you know, I think it's fantastic because I forgot to mention one other part. You know, on iTunes, you get 30-second previews. On Lala, you get to play any song in their library once all the way through. So you can actually fully preview a song one time.
So one time, and then what's this 10 cent thing?
10 cents allows you to have unlimited plays online.
So every time you play it, you pay another 10 cents?
No, you pay 10 cents. You purchase the song to listen to it online only. And so you get unlimited plays of that once you've paid 10 cents for it.
See, this conversation you guys are having right here where you're confused is why every one of these services is bankrupt or on the way out of bankruptcy. People put up with complication for a combo meal, but for whatever reason, they won't put up with complication for something like digital music. People have different tolerances for you know, weirdness and pricing. And
I don't feel like...
I was just going to say, the reason I'm asking is because I'm trying to understand and wrap my head around how this is different than a company here in San Diego that tried doing something similar and was sued out of existence. And, you know, a lot of people are going to remember MP3.com. You guys remember MP3.com?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They had this cool thing that they set up called The Vault. And what you could do is there was a little piece of software that you put on your Mac or your PC, and it would scan physical CDs. So you would put the CD in your drive. It wouldn't rip the CD. What it would do is scan, verify that it's a real CD, and then unlock that in a vault. They had gone and they had ripped all the music into their servers, and it would unlock that, add that to your vault, and then you could stream it to any computer you want. But you had to verify that you owned the physical disc first. So in this case, it sounds like it's scanning your hard drive to verify you own, you know, or have bought a certain album on iTunes, and then we'll unlock it in this account. But, you know, MP3.com, just the record industry sued them all the heck, and they went out of business. So,
well, it looks like Lala's actually made deals with several of the with any of the
and that's probably the difference is yeah. that MP3.com didn't sort of clear it first with the record labels.
Right,
they just kind of went and did it.
And then there's an actual monetization angle for Lala. Then I don't know what was the angle with MP3. Was it MP3.com?
Good question. I don't really know. Yeah. I mean, but the point was
there one? Kind of
their point was, hey, you own the music. It's just we're giving you a storage area.
Well, with
you could do the same thing with Boxy, right? You could rip your CD and throw it onto Boxy and probably stream it wherever you want.
Sure, and Simplify Music will do a similar thing where it, as long as the computer that has the music is online, you can access that and stream it. But it's really sucky. Lala has actually even gotten some investments from Warner Music, although I think they reduced what they were investing to like $9 million from $20 million. But they, I don't know if we probably didn't cover the fact that they also made a deal recently with Google to allow people who are searching for specific songs. So if you search for Lady Gaga on Google, it will give you a link at the top of the Google results list to allow you to listen to the song from Lala.
Lala Gaga.
I know.
It's a song, isn't it?
Are you, Bill? Are you
la la something like that? Yeah.
Bill, are you plugged into your MacBook? Do you have a microphone plugged in? Because it sounds like you're getting audio from your MacBook right now.
I've got my regular headset. Let me just.
Okay. I just feel like
somebody's playing around with some kind of mic.
Yeah. I feel like the service, right now as it is, living in a web browser, I'm not a huge fan of stuff like this that has to live in a web browser, especially because browsers are, so great at managing memory and crashing. I would prefer to have iTunes get this built into it. Not only that, I would also like to get iTunes in better shape. It also takes up a lot of RAM and is pretty slow. But I'm excited.
So Lala requires a web browser for its interface?
Yes, it uses Flash to play the music, and I assume
that I won't even go. I'm not even going to mess with it.
Oh, why not? You don't want to use it in a web browser? You don't like that?
Nope, not at all. A web browser is not an application interface for all of these other services. It shouldn't be. They should be applications.
You don't believe in the cloud, Jeff?
No, actually, I don't.
You think it's all crap?
It is absolute total crap. It's this whole smoke and mirrors and snake oil.
So you don't like the idea of having your music accessible to you wherever you are?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay, you don't want it to be in the web browser.
Yeah, having access to all of my data anywhere I go from any device I have, I really like that idea. But that's not what the cloud is all about. It's about the web applications and then controlling your data.
Applications that interface with the web, not actual software running on your computer as opposed to within a browser. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Now, see, if I have an application, like a full-on native application that I can use that allows me to work with data that's remote, that's okay. And so, Dropbox is a perfect example of that. It integrates directly into the operating system for me and does not require me to use a web browser. So things like Google Docs, to me, that's totally worthless because it's done through a web browser. And I stopped using Pandora, for two reasons. First, I got tired of having to use a web browser as my application to listen to music. And then second, everything runs through Flash, and it requires that you have your security settings for Flash to be shut off. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, so as soon as I locked down all of my Flash security settings, Pandora quit working.
Oh, wow.
Huh. And then I thought, I'm tired of having to jump between tabs to mess with this thing and dealing with all the other overhead of using a web browser to listen to music. And that was it. And so I stopped using Pandora. And even when people have said, yeah, but you can do it from your iPhone, I don't care.
Well, there is an application for the Mac called Pandora Jam. I don't know if you checked that out, but I completely agree with you on that. You know, I would prefer, you know, as soon as I checked out Lala, I thought, this is wonderful. I'm going to go to iusethis.com and find an app that somebody wrote that's, you know, who cares if it's a container app, you know, that's literally just a one-purpose web browser for it. I want a separate app for it. But right. You know, nobody's made it yet. So when it becomes something that is, you know, essentially iTunes, you know, also the interface on Lala.com isn't that great. You know, if the service is integrated into iTunes, it's a killer product.
Can I disagree with you on that?
Yeah, go for it.
I think I got a decade's worth of data to back me up. One thing, I mean, never in the history of recorded music have people ever wanted to rent music. This has never been a desire. And some people said, well, there's never been, you know, the right technology. There's never been the right platform. But I think all decade, I mean, we saw everything before iTunes was everything in digital music was streaming. No one wanted it. Or rental or whatever you want to call it, just to group it all together. iTunes has spent the past decade kicking ass and becoming a total dynasty by studiously avoiding any kind of music rental or any situation where you pay for music and then later you don't have access to it. All these services, whether it's Rhapsody or you name it, you know, every streaming / rental / service, they're all gone. They're all dying off. This is another service that was apparently going bankrupt, according to New York Times source. This company approached Apple and said, "Hi, we're bankrupt. Want to buy us?"
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they approached
and
Apple.
And so Apple said, well, sure. It's not because they want to keep this website going. I guarantee you that. They may integrate something like that into iTunes, but it was probably more about, hey, look, we can get this company for, you know, the cost of relative pocket lint, and they got some engineers who have experience in digital music. Let's bring them in. Why not buy them? It costs us nothing. And if they're good, we'll keep them. If they're lousy engineers, we'll fire them. You know, but I don't see this as – when I saw that, I thought, well, there's just no way this is representing it's any kind of a shift in Apple's philosophy or anything. This is just, you know, this is some website with three readers said, Michael, I want you to buy us and make us part of iPhone Alley for a dollar. You'd buy it because they had three good bloggers working for them that you wanted, not because you wanted their domain with three readers coming in.
So do you think that the you brought up the point that most people don't want to deal with a music rental service. Lala allows you to, you know, listen to whatever track you've paid for, you know, unlimited amount of times, you know, you pay for it once. So there's no actual rental fee. It's pretty cheap.
Three readers coming in, a music rental service. Two great tastes. It tastes great together.
we had some technical difficulties with my computer crashing, but I was going to say in response to Bill that you brought up the point that most people don't want to deal with a subscription music service. There are a lot of people who do want to do that, but for the most part, you know, I don't want to do that. But in the case
by a lot of people, do you mean 50?
Yes. Now, Lala, you know, when you do the 10 cents, like I said before, the 10 cent song purchase is, you know, available to you forever, although it's, you know, it depends on whether or not Lala sticks around for any extended period of time. So people are a little uncomfortable about that. And I think the New York Times actually pointed this out that, you know, if Apple is the one doing this, you know, allowing you to purchase the online streaming version of any song for 10 cents, you know, we're pretty guaranteed that they're going to be around for quite a long time.
Can I throw something out? Can I throw something out here? Because I think we're missing maybe what I think is one of the interesting aspects of this service.
Sure.
When you move it into Apple's iTunes ecosystem. It's something I've talked about and complained that I think is missing from the whole iTunes music experience. And it's the concept of, I don't know how you guys find out about music, but almost 100% of the time, the way I discover it is someone else tells me mm-hmm. about a band or an artist, or hey, you really should check this out. And there's never been this mechanism on iTunes to do that, and I never understood why not, because people, one of the biggest complaints about iTunes is discovery, right? Discovering new music and stuff on iTunes is still a bear. There's not a good process for that. And I noticed in going through this Lala stuff that they have a whole discovery aspect. So there's a social media aspect. Yeah, right. So you can actually dip into and listen to your friends' collections, and you would need to have a streaming component to be able to do that. Obviously, you wouldn't want to just, you know, give them a 30-second clip. I mean,
sure.
Zune, you know, Microsoft tried that with the Zune, right? You could kind of, you know, like squirt a track, and then you could only listen to so much of it, or it was limited plays or something like that. But, you know, if there was a streaming component that was more about focused on the sharing, so I can say, hey, Michael, you really should check out this track, and I could do that in iTunes. So I'm listening into a song in iTunes or on my iPod, and I say, you know what, I want to share this with Michael or this group of friends. If I could hit a button, and then that shoots off, and then next time you go into your iTunes, it says, hey, Adam thinks you should check out these guys, and then you got to play it a couple times, or maybe even sync it to your iPod and play it up to 5 times or something like that. That would, I think, go a long way to generating sales. And I think it kind of gets back to Bill's point. I'm with Bill. I mean, I want to own my music. When I find a good band, I'd love to be able to listen to the track, make sure I'm going to like it more than a 30-second clip. But then if I like it, I'm going to buy it. I'm just going to want to own it. And I think someone had made the comment earlier about, you know, you can't have all your music with you. Well, that's not true, because I have an iPod. And in my case, I have all my music on my iPod, so, and it's always with me. So I do have my library with me all the time. Now, granted, I know I don't have the hugest collection in the world, and there's people out there that just have massive collections that doesn't work for. But I think more interesting in Lala is maybe Apple buying them to get the streaming service to help do something with it to generate sales. And why build all that? You know, why have to build that from scratch if somebody's already kind of laid the groundwork for that?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking through my Lala right now, and it's really fun to say that, by the way. But it, you know, you go through and there's, at the top, there's the ability to, recommend a song to your friend or recommend the album to your friend. You can also gift it, through Lala or through Facebook too. And we were talking about this a little bit back when there were rumors of iTunes 9 before we really knew what would be included in that. Because
they were saying there was that social component,
right,
that turned out to be totally lame.
It's totally crap. It's copy-paste for Twitter.
Well, put iTunes out, it's on your Facebook, which is totally missing the point. This is what Apple needs. And I really want them to have it for podcasts and other content too. I mean, it'd be so great to find out about podcasts by having my friends tell me, hey, you should check out this podcast. And it just shows up, you know, someplace in my iTunes, and I can go, oh, look at all the stuff my you know, people I know have recommended to me.
Yeah. Well, okay. And I think we're missing another interesting aspect to this, where, as you know, I have more music than I can fit on my 32-gigabyte iPhone 3GS. And there are a lot of people in that same situation, whether, you know, it's a different size iPhone or what have you.
Oh, sure.
But the ability to just have all of your music live potentially on the cloud, you know, with, you know, having it fall back to your local copies where necessary, it makes a lot of sense on the iPhone. Especially, you know, if it was integrated directly into the iPod application, where you could say, all right, I have, you know, this library of, you know, 1500 songs on my iPhone, but I have a lot of other stuff on my home computer that I actually own. And if that's all recognized by iTunes, you know, just stream it to me. You know, if I don't have it on my phone, I still want to have access to that music. That's really incredible. And I think we've been talking about that ever since the iPhone was introduced, the ability, because it is always connected, and, you know, you want access to your music on the go.
Think about this too. What if you could swap it?
You mean squirt it? Like a Zoom?
No. So you have the streaming component. So say you have, you know, X amount of music synced to your iPhone or iPod, and you're out, you're on the go, and you suddenly decide, you know what, I don't want this Stones album, I want that Beatles album that's sitting at home. If you could go out to the cloud, see that music, have the option to stream it, what if you could swap it? What if you could clear an album's worth of space on your iPod right there, or your iPhone right there, and then say, okay, pull me down that album because I own it.
Yeah, and right. there's only a little bit of engineering that Apple would actually have to do to actually present that in a very usable way, because right now, as it is, a good example is downloading a large application like maybe a Navigon GPS or something like that that has a lot of information. It actually requires you to download it and then unzip, so you have to have kind of twice that much information plus a little bit. And it's not very obvious, you know, how much space you have relative to how much you need, in additional space you need, when you're presented with the, you know, you're out of space dialogue. So if in that case, you know, the swapping kind of thing, it says, you know, hey, I want to download this Beatles album. And it says, well, you don't have enough space for that. Would you like to delete some music to, you know, to make room for that? And then it just kind of gives you a little progress bar at the bottom, a little colored thing. It says, you know, you have to delete this much music until you have, you know, enough room to download this album.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the complaint. I mean, maybe this is something to solve the problem of re-downloads. I don't know. You know, that would be something that I would have paid for in a heartbeat, you know, some extra money per month if Apple could just archive all my purchases. You know, they know that I bought an album. And this is another problem that they have with people who lose their music collections. You know, you've bought a bunch of stuff on iTunes, you can't just re-download it. We can with apps. It never made sense to me why you couldn't do that. So, you know, if it's a licensing thing and this helps, you know, this acquisition helps them kind of get closer to the record labels and figure that stuff out, then, you know, there could be a play in there too for that.
How realistic is any of this over a 3G network? I mean, I could see doing it from one computer to another, especially, let's say you've got all your music on your iMac and you also have a laptop that has no music and you usually just do the iTunes sharing, but then you go out of town for the weekend with your laptop, you sit at the hotel and I have no music on here. Then you could use this kind of service to kind of stream from the master copies or whatever the master records that Apple has. But try doing the same thing over your iPhone. All of a sudden you're streaming music over 3G that doesn't work in every city and has dead spots and doesn't work in the subway.
And that's
AT&T
why
AT&T would have a stroke.
Well, and I think the re-download thing would be better. You know, it'd just be like, why not just let me grab this thing from the cloud right then and there? Why do I have to be hooked up to my home iTunes library? If Apple has a record that I own this music and I've paid for it, you know, what difference does it make whether I pull that off my Mac when I'm connected to it or pull another copy down from Apple, you know, through the cloud?
I feel there's obviously a lot of interesting ways this acquisition could be utilized. Yeah. Unfortunately, there is also the point where, you know, they could just be, I think Bill was talking about this before the show, that, you know, maybe they just did it to buy some extra people who have had a lot of experience with this and really aren't necessarily planning to do anything with the technology that Lala has, and would kind of effectively kill the service and not let it, you know, live on through iTunes. Does anybody feel like that's a possibility with what Apple's doing? Jeff said that, you know, he...
I think anything's a possibility.
True.
And actually, I mean, it's probably does make the most sense. I mean,
for them to just kill it?
Yeah, because again, where else is the financial play for Apple in this? Are they going to get more money out of us through us paying more?
There are definite benefits to a lot of the ways that Lala approaches the music sales. You know, especially with, you know, maybe creating an iPhone application that would take advantage of, you know,
but as streaming. A competitor to iTunes, you know, I think Bill's original point to this was that, you know, iTunes' whole model is buying music, right? It's not renting music. It's not borrowing music. It's not streaming music. They've never had that as a play. Steve Jobs has said it himself. Now, you know, Steve Jobs also said we never have video on an iPod.
Sure.
So take that for what it is. But I mean, If you really look at it from historically what Apple does and their posture surrounding music, then, you know, sort of the thing Bill was saying about maybe acquiring some engineers and some people really on the cheap that have a lot of experience in this area. I'm sure they've got people that are dealing with recommendations. We know that's an area that Apple wants to improve on iTunes. So, I mean, there could be a lot of things. And the other thing is, like I think Jeff said, this isn't confirmed. I mean, it's confirmed by what the New York Times and somebody else, but Apple or Lala neither of them have said, yes, this happened.
Yeah. Okay. So move on. Yeah.
Yep.
Pandev, an iPhone application developer, has claimed to have spotted a next generation iPhone in their application usage logs, and I feel like we've already covered this story last week. Did we talk about this, the next gen iPhone?
I don't remember.
Okay, so the guys who make the iBart application, it's you know, BART is the transit system
in the train.
Yeah, exactly. And they have a map for that, And I think it has scheduling and all that. And so they found that, you know, what is it? iPhone 3.1.
I think we did cover this.
I feel like we did.
Yeah, we did. I don't.
It wasn't
there's
show
much
notes,
to say
yeah.
here anyway, though, because is it surprising to anybody that Apple's working on another iPhone and that they might be testing it in the
there's
going to
be a new iPhone? I thought this was the last one.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it realistic that you would see this kind of thing 6 months out? I mean, we all kind of assume we're going to see an iPhone every June until Apple wakes up on a different side of a bed.
I think
well,
the
3GS, yeah. it's almost the same timing for the 3GS. We started, the developer started seeing 2.1, and I think that's why this got, you know, so as much press as it did. But
because it's about time that they started testing in the same manner.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's almost a non-story. It's sort of like Apple's working on another iPhone. It's going to be out in June. It's like the same yearly launch schedule, and they're just on track. So,
well, do you think
Bart
in another news,
badly aging, rundown trains? All right, been on them. They're fun.
So, you know, I wonder if it's
wags.
I wonder if it's possible that the next generation iPhone might have a front-facing camera. You know, for use in an application like Fring maybe. You know, because Fring has just announced that they're now allowing video calling through their iPhone application. But it's only one way because the iPhone currently doesn't have a front-facing camera.
You know, if the iPhone added a second camera so it's front-facing, that would revolutionize the sexting industry.
Yeah, that's true. I think there might be other applications. Do you know... I think last year, or maybe it was even with the iPhone, the original iPhone 3G, that, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, the iPhone's going to get a front-facing camera. You know, there are several Nokia phones that I know of and maybe other phones that have front-facing cameras. I never thought that it would be such a an interesting thing that, you know, I'm actually going to go out of my way to make a video call to somebody as opposed to just a regular call, because most of the people I know probably don't have a front-facing camera anyway.
Well, you know what? Then there's just an opportunity now for Ecamm to make a iPhone version of the Huckleberry. Do you guys know about the Huckleberry?
No, what is that?
Is that the mirror thing that attaches?
Yeah, it's little mirrors that attach to the top of your MacBook and give you a forward-facing MacBook camera.
Oh yeah, I see that. Yeah, those guys, the guys over at Ecamm
is cool. Yeah, so. All we need is that, you know, a Huckleberry case for the iPhone. Just, you know, repoint the lens with a couple mirrors and you're good to go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So would you use, if you had an iPhone with a front-facing camera, would you video call?
Okay.
Or do you think that's a
good
idea?
Oh, here's the answer to this question. I'm going to answer your question by asking you a question.
Okay.
How many times have you used iChat or Skype to make a video call?
Almost never.
I think you just answered your question.
Isn't video phone calls kind of up there like with flying cars? I mean, we're to where we could do it, but now we can't imagine why it would be practical or why we'd need to.
Yeah, nobody wants to. I mean, we have great technology. I have placed a few iChat video calls and a few Skype video calls, and it's great when I use it, but the number of times I've used it, I could probably count on my fingers.
Yeah, but that's because you're married and
yeah, maybe.
Are you? I don't even know.
Yes, I am.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But so I don't know. I think people just aren't real interested in video calls.
Do you think it's an accessibility issue where, you know, maybe they don't have enough friends that have it, or maybe there's just really no need? You think it's a no need?
I think it's picking up in business. I think for like doing remote so people don't have to travel and stuff like that, I think we're seeing, you know, services take off like why am I blanking on all the, you know, video conferencing services for business, but
yeah, I'm,
you know,
surprised because we use them so often
for in business.
Yeah, well, I mean us in general in the business world, this group here.
Oh yeah, because
oh, that's
I use
right.
it all
we
the
don't.
Time. Yeah, no,
we do at my office. We have an office in Germany, and we do video conferencing with them.
Well, that's because Adam, you have a real job. We're bloggers. Well, Jeff is a journalist. I'll give him more credit.
It's work versus home.
So
like none of you knows right now whether I'm wearing a shirt or not, and I'm not going to reveal that because I don't want to.
Well, we know Jeff's not wearing pants. That's
yeah, that goes without saying.
Right, and
yeah,
I'm picturing
his MacBook camera isn't angled that way anyway. So
that's lucky.
I tried. I hacked in.
Yeah, and Bill just so you know, I'm picturing you doing the podcast without a shirt at all.
So, but yeah, it has obvious applications in a business space. Whether or not that is something that needs to be on a mobile phone at this time is, you know, up for debate. But
it's great that it is. Like, I'll just say this. You know, it's cool that it is, and I there's no reason not to have it if we can have it. But
right.
The question was, would I use it? And the answer is probably not.
Probably not right now. But I feel like, you know, having the technology out there and a company like Apple, you know, actually integrating it into their devices, especially with something as popular as the iPhone, it brings, you know, the technology of cell phones and communication. It, you know, brings it one step further into, you know, that Star Trek future that, you know, I think we all look forward to. And whether or not we're going to use it all the time, you know,
but
isn't
but note on the Star Trek, you know, tricorder or whatever, there was no video.
I know that.
Yeah. Now, the tricorder had a little video screen, but the communicator did not.
Oh, communicator, that was it.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm mixing up my handheld devices.
But what about
why
the
wasn't it all? Why wasn't it all in one? Just while we're mentioning things,
probably actually
due to licensing.
I'm going to speculate. It's because William Shatner didn't want to wear the little box thing because he probably thought it looked like a purse, and so they had to come up with the communicator so that he didn't have to wear the tricorder over his shoulder.
Yeah,
that's my guess.
And then they got rid of the little purse tricorder anyway.
Actually, no. You know what? I'm going to go totally Trek geek on this one.
Right.
And say it goes back to the original pilot where they didn't have tricorders. They had their phasers and then they had communicators.
Mm-hmm.
The tricorder didn't come in until they did their second. I don't even know. Were tricorders even in the second pilot?
I don't know.
I'm going to have to go back and watch both of them now just for that.
Okay. Well, speaking of Star Trek and future things, Apple is considering selling their iPod Touch point of sale system, according to a rumor anyway. There have been several rumors that have said that Apple wants their employees to take down the information from anyone who is interested in possibly using the point of sale system in their own personal business because, you know, it's very cool. And for those who don't know, it's, you know, they recently started rolling out an iPod Touch version of their really cool, you know, they used to use Windows CE devices in the retail stores. And it was pretty cool because, you know, you didn't have to go to a register to check out. You just find someone, say, I want a MacBook, and they bring it out and they take your card right there. You don't have to wait in line. And it's awesome. It's just that it was running on Windows CE. So they switched over to the iPod Touch recently. And have you guys seen these? Because my at least one of my Apple stores have them, and they look great. And everything I've heard is you know, good things.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Has anyone made a purchase where they have to sign?
I have not. I did talk to the people at my store about them, and they were all one very happy to have the devices. Were quick to say that they were not crashing as much as the Windows devices did. but I think the thing they were most excited about was the multi barcode scanning. So it can scan multiple barcodes all at once, which I guess is extremely helpful when you're ringing up an iPhone because there's like three or four barcodes that they have to scan in, mm-hmm. and they can do it in one pass now, they said, which saves a lot of time for the customer during the checkout process.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Now, what's the dollar amount where they make you sign? And I'm asking because yesterday I had to go to the mall and buy a new battery for my laptop. And they used the new iPod Touch POS, and I didn't have to sign anything.
Did you use a debit card or did you use a credit card?
I don't know. It was the silver colored one I pulled out of my.
Well, did you give them a PIN number instead? Because I think it's something.
Oh no,
like,
there was no PIN number involved.
I feel like it's something maybe over. It may depend on the retailer, but I think in some places it's like, you know, over $10 or $20 or something like that. But
a battery costs $130.
Right. Yeah.
So did you have to show ID though? Zappos is pretty fanatical about that usually in retail.
I didn't have to show ID.
Interesting.
Now,
Are you sure it wasn't just some random dude with a
Are you sure it wasn't a guy with an iPod who said, yeah, here take it?
All I care is that the battery works.
If your card's still in your wallet, is the question.
Yeah, did you give him your card?
I have to go find my pants to...
some random guy in a red shirt with a swiper on the back of his iPhone.
And then he died on Star Trek.
Yep.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Well, from what I heard at the from one of the guys at my Apple store, a lot of them don't even use the Pogo stylus that they include. They just have had a lot of customers sign with their finger, and that has been enough.
How funny.
Yeah. Oh, God, I tried to sign with my finger the other day in the grocery store, and it turned out it wasn't a touch screen. I think they thought I was an actual, you know... It was sad. It was the first time at this grocery store, you know, new part of town.
They thought you
and now the last time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're thinking, why are these dummies all looking at me? This is how it works. I'm like, and then he hands me a slip and a pen to sign. I'm like, oh.
And you look at him and go, oh, how quaint.
You should have shown him your iPhone then.
It's surprising they couldn't add the little surface like the UPS guy has, you know, just to the back of that case, and you would just sign on the, you know, the little
a giant signature surface.
Well, they have just a little one. It's about the size of a, you know, where you would put a signature on a regular, you know, on the screen of one of those things at your retail store.
Well, don't you think that the iPod Touch is as big as that though? I mean,
the front screen. I just have heard. Yeah, I've been hearing comments. You were saying people were using their finger because I was hearing that the Pogo stylus wasn't all that great. I mean, have you ever used a Pogo stylus? It's kind of, you know, it's about the tip's probably not much smaller than the tip of your pinky finger.
But
it's got this little spongy thing on the end of it. So
I feel like the advantage to that though is that, you know, it's not as it doesn't have as many oils as your finger does, so it moves across the surface a little better. But you said the tip falls off, Jeff?
Yeah, I've heard from a couple people that the tips fall off.
Oh, I have a couple of the it's the 10-1 stylus, right? The guys who it's 10-1. Yeah, I have a couple of those, and I haven't had any issues. Although I really haven't used them a whole lot, and I'm not using the larger version. I'm using the smaller pocket-sized version.
Yeah, that's the one I have. And my stylus tip is not falling off at all. Of course, yeah. I've never actually taken the thing out of the box. So that probably something
Oh, so that's not just me, too. So, but it is a cool product, not to knock the 10-1 guys. And the fact that they, you know, are kind of bundled in with this retail system is, you know, that totally rocks
cool
for those
for
guys. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool device too if you use any of the little a lot of people like them for the art applications on the iPhone.
Oh yeah, I haven't even thought of that. Sure.
You know, so you can get a lot more accuracy, and it is a lot smaller than your fingertip, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's good if you're in a cold environment and you have to wear gloves a lot.
And you're not wearing fingerless gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So anonymous sources within the industry have been talking about how Apple is bullying NAND flash producers with questionable purchasing practices. I guess the idea with this is Apple's putting in orders for more flash than they actually intend to buy and waiting for the prices to go down, right? And because the supply is higher, and, mm-hmm. And then they buy less than they initially ordered, and so they have a lower price. So they target a low price internally and wait for the prices to go down before they buy it. And so the industry is saying that, you know, it's kind of hurting.
That's brilliant.
That's called capitalism.
It's so funny you guys are mentioning that's exactly
you
what
can
I said.
Do that
on my podcast. Yeah, they place a huge order and then say, oh, we're only going to take 75% of the order. We only need 75% of it. So then the manufacturers have this glut, this surplus.
Yep.
Price comes down and Apple comes back and says, oh, yeah, we needed a little bit more.
The irony is there are probably laws that say that you can't do that to another U.S.-based company.
Yep.
But if Apple's doing that to an overseas company, you know, who's going to – they're probably not technically breaking any laws.
Well, Samsung has a U.S. base. Probably.
And I don't know that that's true. But, I mean, in these contracts, they don't have to take Apple's – you know, order.
True.
So, you know, it's kind of like, and they usually have termination clauses or things that say if you don't, you know, if you take less than this. I mean, they can build stuff into their contracts. My guess is that Apple has enough clout that Apple just says no, we won't sign it if you build that in, and they go, oh well, okay.
Well, the fact that Apple's been the largest purchaser of flash memory in the last 10 years, you know, probably says a lot. You know, and they kind of want to maintain a good relationship with them.
It's good for us as consumers. It keeps prices low. So it's like, I hope they keep doing it.
You know,
true,
if the Zune actually sold, Microsoft would be doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, I have to ask Jeff about something, as he's been around on Macs, I think, is probably longer than I have, or at least as long. And I mentioned this in my show too, but I couldn't find the confirmation. I searched all over online, but didn't Apple used to do a similar thing? Weren't there complaints from IBM and Motorola back in the day that Apple did a similar kind of thing with the PowerPC chips?
Oh yeah, the whole PowerPC thing is just one giant soap opera, and there was bickering between all the companies and people saying they were ordering stuff and then not taking it, and that it was just an ongoing thing, or placing an order and then not getting the whole thing. And
yep. Yeah. So when I saw this story, I went, oh, Apple's just doing the same thing they've been doing for 20 years.
Yeah.
Why is anybody surprised?
Because they're winning now?
Yeah, because they're winning. And
closer scrutiny because you're number one instead of number five.
Well, I think the other side of this is obviously that Apple's kind of pushing the NAND flash manufacturers to, keep on top of their game. I feel like, this is also, not only is this going to bring down prices for flash embedded devices like the iPhone and the iPod, but it also helps bring down flash prices throughout the board, across the board, because Apple also wants to, any PC manufacturer wants to bring flash based hard drives into their computers eventually, and right now with the prices as they are, it's a little difficult, but I feel like there isn't a lot of competition in that, and the prices haven't come down a whole lot, but eventually that's where everything's going to go.
Hey, if the manufacturers don't like it, they don't have to take Apple's order, and I'm sure there'll be somebody else that's more than happy to play Apple's game.
So have we talked about Edge on the show before? The game, I'm sure I've picked it at least as one of my picks. It's a really cool iPhone game that came out, I think, probably a year ago. And
is that the little block cubey thing that you roll around?
Yeah, it's really cool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Edge has been removed from the App Store and come back several different times because a guy named Tin Len Langdell has claimed that he has copyright over the word Edge. And the deal with that is, essentially the way Apple has it set up is that if you go to Apple saying, a particular app is infringing on my copyrights or intellectual property, Apple will just simply remove it from the store without notifying the developer of anything, or and in many cases they're not even contacting the developer when the developer questions why it was removed. And this is kind of so Apple doesn't interfere with these legal issues between the developers, and that's a good stance. But it's very obvious that it's too they're not paying enough attention to what's going on, because this has been removed at least three times, and even very recently, several developers have, indie developers have shown their support for the game and MOBA game as the developer by adding the word Edge to their application names, just to kind of, mock this guy for claiming the rights to the word Edge. So I think there was Canna Edge, like instead of Cannabalt, stuff like that.
Now, Tim, what's his name? Has he even made any games in this century?
I don't think he's really done anything with the copyright in a very long time. He's just known for suing.
Is this copyright or trade? This is trademark, right? Not copyright.
I think it's trademark.
It may be, yeah.
Just to clarify, I think he has trademark for the name Edge. He never made a game, or there's not... The Edge game on the iPhone, I don't think, is replicating any of the technology or the copyright in his games. I think this is all about the name.
Yeah, it is all about the name, and it is about trademark. I'm looking at the recent Pocket Gamer article on it, and they initially said copyright trolling, but if you look back further, they're talking about trademarks. Okay. Just to clear that up. But yeah, it is about the name and having to do with having it used in games.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I mean, either way, I mean, to Jeff's point, apparently this is how this guy makes his money now, because he's not making any games.
Right. And I feel that, but the, I think the bigger issue here is, you know, Apple, you know, not really looking at what's going on with in these kind of cases. And, you know, there, I think, what is it? There's IndieVision, one of the guys at IndieVision has, you know, talked about how Apple doesn't really, you know, communicate with the developer, at least in the case of Moby Game, you know, as to why the games or the applications are being removed. So it seems like it's a bad little hole in the whole App Store process, because it seems to me like I could send an email to someone at iTunes tomorrow and, you know, pick a game or app and say, you know, I have trademarks with this thing, you know, that shouldn't be there, and you know, they would just remove it.
I'm laughing now because I popped over to his website to see. Did you guys pop over to his website to see if he's actually making games? Apparently, he has the Edge Game Store is now open again. He has a new game coming soon, and there's about 4 different licensed products with the Edge name in them now. And I don't remember the first time I read this story, I don't remember that stuff being there.
He probably threw crap up on the site. Just
yeah, his lawyer probably told him to get some.
You can get an Edge USB or SD memory card, an Edge.
just a USB card with Edge written on there.
And that's exactly what it is.
Nunchuck controller for your Wii or an Edge PC.
I'll show you a Wii. You know, it's ironic that Apple has in this decade been so overly zealous in protecting its own trademarks, and in my assessment, going way beyond the scope of the law in some cases for things they clearly knew they didn't have claim on. And yet when it comes to this, they're like, nah, hands off. You guys are on your own.
Yeah. So sorry, I had to mute myself because the air raid siren was going off over here.
It's that time again.
It is about that time. And I should... you go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I probably should not be so so liberal about, you know, bagging on people who are trying to assert their trademark rights if they legitimately have their have trademark, you know, because I've had similar problems with, you know, Maccast and things like that. So, you know, I don't want to be totally insensitive, but this one does seem a little bit, you know, overreaching.
Yes,
in a lot of ways.
The problem is, guys like this make you look unreasonable in the public eye when you go after reasonable claims, because people start perceiving that anyone protecting a trademark must be some kind of jerk or a schemer, because this guy is the poster boy, and it makes it tougher for the legitimate claims.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess, I mean, Apple sort of has, don't you guys think Apple has to side with this guy, though, because of how aggressive they've been about things like Pod?
True, yeah.
I mean, Bill?
Sometimes I wonder about what the Kool-Aid they're drinking over in Apple's legal department. I would expect them to be ruthless and really powerful over there, really devilishly clever. Sometimes it seems like Apple's legal department is actually some kind of liability where they're, I don't know, where it just doesn't strike me that they're the sharpest knives in the drawer. I probably shouldn't be too mean to them, but...
Right.
I mean, you wonder. I mean, what are they worried about? That this clown's going to sue them, and if so, what? I mean,
why is Apple getting in the middle of it? I guess is the big precedent
to let some little bully walk all over you like that if you're a huge corporation. You know, let him sue you. You know, destroy him financially if he really is the fraud that we think he is. They could confirm that, and you know, teach a lesson to all these other fraudulent trademark claimers. So if someone really does go to Apple with a trademark claim, then Apple knows that it's for real, because they don't want to end up in the unemployment line like this ass clown did.
He does have the trademark, right?
He does have the trademark. And you also have to realize you have to
protect it. I mean, unfortunately, the laws are such in the United States where you have to aggressively protect your trademark too. Otherwise, they take it away from you.
But you also have to realize, Bill, that you know, Apple's policy in the App Store regarding trademark disputes and that sort of thing, their policy is just pull it from the store and let them settle it themselves. And in this case, that's not working out.
It is though, right? Because he had to rename his app and it's back up there.
Right. Okay. So they changed it to Edgy, but it's still, you know,
Isn't that like the police showing up at the scene of an accident and saying, I can't figure out who's at fault. You guys have a fist fight, and whoever wins, you know? It doesn't. I mean, not that Apple should have to suddenly be the police.
It's the one case where it seems like Apple is not trying to get involved with anything having to do with the App Store.
But they're pulling somebody's app, right? They're screwing you. They're taking away your app, your income. So these developers have a legal case against Apple. Not that any developer is stupid enough to sue Apple, but I would think that's the greater legal liability. You can sue Apple and say, look, you cost me this much revenue for something that you knew was a ridiculous claim. Because you obviously have your own attorneys. You could have figured that out in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, and to Bill's point, I mean, they could sue Apple because if it turns out they fight him and they get the right to use the name Edge, well then, yeah, they've potentially lost revenue, or they could argue that they lost revenue over it, and Apple jumped in the middle for what reason? I mean, I don't think Apple has any legal requirement to get in the middle of it. They could still say, look, the app's up there until we, you get it out in court that we need to take it down. You know, don't they send like takedowns and things like that to these people, or is it just the higher road? Is this similar to what Google does but that's not just trademark, that's copyright.
Right. And so it's also a guilty until proven innocent kind of situation.
If they wanted to be fair, they could leave the app in the store but put the revenue in escrow, and if a suit is settled, then the revenue would go to whoever owned it. I mean, they could split the difference if they wanted to, but they're definitely siding with whoever makes the claim.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to the last story, and then we'll get to our picks. AT&T and Verizon have dropped their lawsuits over the coverage map ads. So as you have heard, they've been in a bit of a fight over the original Verizon AT&T coverage map ads, and they got Luke Wilson involved and a droid involved, and
sounds like the worst Star Wars sequel ever.
Luke Wilson and an android. So, as far as this story came out, I think on the 2nd of December, I've still seen the ads, so I wonder if they're going to continue doing the ads, but the lawsuit has allegedly been dropped.
Oh, I'm sure the ads will continue to run.
I'm sure they will. And I think that's, I think that's fine. And I think it Verizon essentially, pointed out that AT&T is being a big baby when in their legal response to AT&T's lawsuit.
I'm
wishing they would sue each other into oblivion, because then we'd be rid of both of them, but
then we'd be stuck with T-Mobile, Bill.
Well, no, in all seriousness, I mean, these companies are, to my mind, not that they like each other, they're way too close. I mean, it's not that they necessarily sit around the pool saying, what level of crappiness should we put the service at? But they're all kind of just tacitly colluding as far as crappy levels of service, crappy coverage. They know what the other service is offering. They make sure theirs is just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw the lawsuit, I thought, at least for once, they're at each other's throats. Let them hate each other. Let them wake up one day and say, we're actually going to be like a little bit better than the other one. And now the lawsuit's dropped. Like, dang, that was my little dream of these companies finally competing with each other instead of doing whatever the hell it is they're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Hiring Luke Wilson. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
You got to understand, when Verizon hires Owen Wilson, and then T-Mobile hires Matthew McConaughey dressed as Owen Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to our iPhone picks. Adam, let's let you go first.
Well, you know what? I came totally unprepared today, so I'm going to be very evil and pick an app that is awesome and has saved my life a couple times, but no one can have, except for the few of us that are elite enough to have grabbed it.
Oh,
NetShare.
I have that. Actually, I did not purchase NetShare. A very nice reader of iPhone Alley managed to, I think they gave me their iTunes username and password, because, you have to authorize the application. Right. But yeah, they sent it over. It was very nice of them. But yeah, go ahead and talk about NetShare.
I got to pick. Okay, so NetShare is an app that came out way, way back when and was on the store, I don't know for how long, maybe a week. That allowed you to do tethering. And it's my complaint about it is it's a little bit of a bear to set up, because you basically use the iPhone as like a proxy. You have to set up a little Wi-Fi network and set up a proxy. So it has the instructions in there. It's a little bit tricky to get up and running, but once it's up and running, it works great and allows you to use your iPhone as, you know, a wireless, you know, 3G modem. And I've had, you know, two or three times when I've been in an area where I just needed to get online and there was no Wi-Fi available, nothing. And NetShare has really worked in a pinch. And it just happened to me this week. I was at a, of all places, I was at Qualcomm for a user group conference or a user group meeting and no Wi-Fi, no open Wi-Fi at Qualcomm. I don't know why, but I was able to use NetShare and get online and get some stuff done. So it's awesome. I guess so. The flip side of this is my wish that, geez, Louise, can AT&T get off their butts and make tethering available?
You know, someone commented on last week's podcast, and one of our listeners said that, you know, in respect to tethering, you know, you'll really enjoy the fact that you can get on the internet and do voice, call over voice on AT&T when you have tethering, because in Canada,
ooh, that's huge.
They
yeah.
have that. Yeah. Mm. And if, you know, obviously with NetShare, because it is an application that you have to run in the background, you can't do that. But if you didn't have, that simultaneous thing, you know, even if it's running as a background, service, you wouldn't be able to, take a call and be on the internet at the same time. And in many cases, you know, where I am when it was just Edge and it didn't allow that, a lot of times if you were downloading something or actually actively using the data, it wouldn't even kick you off. It would go right to voicemail if someone tried to call you.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Yeah, and that takes that ad campaign to a whole new level, but yeah. So I'm going to pick NetShare. Unfortunately,
you can't get it.
It's not available anymore. I wish it was. If you have a copy and you're lucky enough to have it on your phone, it still works, which I was surprised by. I wasn't entirely certain it was going to still be working.
Yeah.
And it still works, and it worked great. I was able to surf just fine.
Cool. How much did NetShare cost when it was available? Was it $10?
I think it was $10.
Cool. Yeah. Did you get it, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
And I missed it when it first went up.
Then you grabbed it the second time through, huh?
Yeah. It had gone up and had been up for like 10 minutes, and I get a phone call from someone, and I think the call was, oh, my God, it's back, and they hung up.
Was that
and
Dave?
And I knew what they meant, and I sprinted to get back to my computer and download it right away before it disappeared again.
Nice.
And it's from Null River, so I should just probably... you can get some really cool stuff from Null River, like Connect 360, and they have some other great software. I think they had a piece of software I use for syncing content to my PSP. PSPware, something like that. And Connect 360 lets you stream content from your Mac to your Xbox 360 and things like that. So there is some great software you can get from Null River if you missed out on NetShare.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, I got one of those phone calls once, but they were actually talking about the McRib.
And I bet you still sprinted just like I did.
Uh-huh. Oh, you wouldn't believe.
Yep. Oh, but I would.
Mm-hmm. Bill, do you have an iPhone pick for us this week?
I do. It's kind of obvious, and I've been holding my breath, hoping nobody else would take
it because
it just came out. But Super Monkey Ball 2, the sequel, is finally out. It was one of the earliest iPhone games, you know, got a lot of buzz. It was way too hard for me back then. It's way too hard for me now, but it looks really cool and makes me seasick. And I think mainly I'm picking it because I know a lot of people have been looking forward to this. People ask, you know, and so it's out. And if you're a better gamer than I am, you should be able to get past level one like I can't seem to.
So you have Super Monkey Ball 2, but you're having trouble with it still?
I'm just a really lousy tilt player of any kind of game, I guess it's fair to say.
Well, that was the biggest complaint about Super Monkey Ball was the controls. And they touted the fact that they've greatly improved it with Super Monkey Ball 2. And I did have a chance to play with it. And it's a lot better. It's definitely a lot better. And if you like the tilt games, it totally rocks. So I definitely recommend, you know, at least looking at a gameplay video. You know, you can check out on iPhoneAlley.com. I think our post had a video in there. And, you know, it's a cool game. $9.99.
Yeah, and I should qualify. Like I said, I'm bad at even the easy tilt games. So I'm no judge of that. But, you know.
Yeah. And I think it's getting good reviews in the iTunes store. So that's something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff, do you have an iPhone pick this week?
No. I'm kidding, of course. My pick this week is Travel Help, and I'm picking this because, you know, I get on a plane in the morning and I'm taking off for Italy. And what Travel Help does is it gives you all of the emergency phone numbers for any country you might be in. And it also gives you embassy phone numbers. And then if there happen to be other specific phone numbers you need in some country, you can add those to the app also. So it just, it has all that stuff in one easy to use application. All you have to do is say, this is my nationality, and then it gives you everything else.
Cool. So it's the from Nod Concept LLC?
Yes. Yeah. It's like $2 or $3.
Yep. 99 cents actually.
Or 99 cents.
Yeah. And does it have location awareness? Does it figure out where you are and say, here's a number?
No, but it just gives you a list, and it has flags for each country.
Okay, so home embassy.
So you have to do is flick to the down the list of the country you need.
Cool. So if you need to get to the U.S. embassy, you can do that.
Yeah, and it'll link back into Mobile Safari, and yeah, it's amazingly simple. It's like a one trick pony, but it does that one trick really well.
Cool. So Travel Help, it's 99 cents in the App Store. And so my pick this week is a GPS navigation application. It is free, and it's called Waze. Have you guys seen this? It's really cool. The idea is that it's community supported maps. So they don't license any of the maps. It's completely free, and part of it is that the community actually helps. To make the maps better. So you, as you're going down the street and, there's a spot that hasn't been verified yet by someone driving down the same road with Waze, your car on the map will then turn into a little Pac-Man guy and start eating the dots. And every dot you earn points. And there are, pieces of fruit that show up and other bonus items that get you extra points. And those you generally show up when there are errors on the map. And so you go there and you verify it by, driving there with your car and eating those items. And it offers turn-by-turn directions. It's not, fantastic, in a for-pay application, but that's because, you have to use it around your area and it'll get better. But it will eventually get you where you need to be going, and you might end up using, some extra munchies on the way.
Make the Pac-Man sound?
It doesn't. It doesn't make the Pac-Man sound. I think they have to avoid.
It's overpriced.
Well, the cool thing also on top of that is, once you've, if you know, like, let's say you're in an area, with a lot of traffic and a big commute, like in, maybe California or something like that, and you know the best way to your office, and it may involve a lot of traffic depending on, what's going on that day. You've traveled that specific direction, and they'll kind of figure out what the best route is. So then they'll start pulling information from various sources, including other people who have Waze. And if, there are several Waze users who are stuck in traffic, or if it's really slow, then that information will be relayed to your app, and it will update that and put you on a different route and let you know about it. And it's free. So it's Pac-Man for your car, plus GPS navigation, plus free. Right? Free is
That's
a good
pretty
price,
cool.
And it's community, community driven, which is awesome. I wonder, if it didn't have the Pac-Man aspect to it, I don't feel like it would work out. But the fact that you earn points for this, that's
right.
Pretty cool.
So. It's almost like creating a real life video game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kind of like geocaching, but for your car. Maybe. It uses GPS. That's it. That's as far as it goes as being related to geocaching. But it's Waze, W-A-Z-Y, not Y, W-A-Z-E, can't read, and it's free. So check that out in the App Store. And with that, you can check out our iPhone picks and the show notes at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. And you can send feedback to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. I can't believe we're done talking already. It seems like it was a short show, but it's, You know, it's a normal normal time show. Jeff Gamet's at the MacObserver.com, iPodObserver.com, and Twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Hey, sure thing. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Yeah, and Adam Christensen is at the MacCast.com. It's MacCast.com and Twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Thanks.
And Bill Palmer is at iProng Magazine, iProng.com, right?
Yeah, and we changed it. It's edge.com.
I thought it was edge.magicmouse.billpalmer.com.
It's iPodMagazineEdge.com. So you get all of those in there. And Twitter.com/Bill Palmer, right?
Yeah.
And you want to do the – do you have a Twitter for iProng?
It's really complicated. It's Twitter.com/iProng.
And what kind of stuff are you going to get on that one?
You're going to get a mix of music and podcaster interviews from really famous musicians and a good mix of, app and hardware reviews. You're already getting that from iPhone Alley, so you don't need it. But come for the music stuff if you like that.
Yeah, definitely. And iPhone Alley's Twitter is twitter.com/iPhone Alley. And with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is in the can.
Just once you at the end, you should say another episode is in the toilet.
That's implied, I think. And I keep calling you Jeff.
Did Bill ever do to you?
I don't know. I think
it'd be great if there was a video thing like one of those ESPN shows where the four talking heads, because I can just keep a score on the bottom number of times I've been called Jeff this episode.
Well, almost called Jeff.
Almost called Jeff.
Yeah.
Probably half a point.
Yeah, that's a half a point.
No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? Stylus. 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 You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck. Yuck. No.